Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Good morning and welcome to an hour of mind power. This is Donna Sebo. And so many times in our experiences in life, we cross paths with people from different cultures. And if we have the opportunity and patience, it's good for us sometimes to listen to their stories. Because in every part of the world, there are environments, there are cultural traditions that perhaps in one's mind view, we would think, are not so good. But as in all cultures, there are positives and negatives. And my guest today, who is Kelly Bader, is a woman who decided she was going to share her personal story because of what she has lived through. And yet what she went through has enabled her to be the strong, intelligent, lovely woman that she is today. Her book is titled, A Little Girl Called Grace. Kelly Bader, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Donna. It's such an honor to be here.
Kelly, I hope you don't mind me calling you Kelly.
Oh, of course.
Kelly, I always am intrigued, ever since I've been a little girl, with how people get to where they are. And that's what your book is all about, your journey. But not just your journey, your mother's journey, which had obviously a tremendous impact on your life. And you came from what part of the world?
I am original coming from Taiwan, which is Southeast Asia.
In Taiwan, when you were a little girl, your father had concubines, right?
Yeah, he had a couple of girlfriends, if we put to the today's modern languages.
You know, I can remember when I was a young girl reading about the cultural tradition in China. And in my young mind and in my educational background, when I was young, China was a big country. But Taiwan and other places just didn't have that much significance in my mind and in my historical study environment when I was growing up. Mm-hmm. And these cultural patternings, people will think, oh my goodness, that's so ancient. But it really went on for quite a long time in the Chinese culture and even, I think, in most of the Asian culture. This was not uncommon. Am I correct?
Yeah, especially in 90, this story, the social background was 1960s, right? So in that time, you are so right. It wasn't, not unusual, and because it's very, very a male-dominated culture.
And you had an Auntie Sue, and that was another lady friend of your father. In fact, you start off with a chapter, Learning What Women Are Worth. And it has been a sad story about the Asian culture in many respects, dependent on your class level that you were in. But women were not valued. They were treated as property. They just, it was again, something that had been this way for centuries. Am I again correct?
Yeah. Donna, it's just like when in that time, when a baby girl was born and you would give eggs as a gift. But if it's a baby boy born, parents got a lot of other good stuff, as a gift. So pretty much it just kind of tell you that the value they put on baby girl. They just think she's just another baby production machine down the road. Mm-hmm. And so that was the situation there, And it seems that so they don't put the education, they don't put the investment in our girls. So when girls grow up, and it's very tough for them just to survive alone in the career place, in the working place. So a lot of girls end up like had to lean on men. And my mom, that time, she was one of them.
Mm-hmm. I think that the level of training and education a girl was given was that she had to strive, if she could, to be wife number one, because then that put her in a particular positioning. And your mother was a concubine. And when I saw that word, I thought, my goodness, that is a word that most people wouldn't even want to relate to unless they were talking about something historically. But again, it wasn't that long ago. And one of the things people don't realize in the United States, women's rights are not all that recent. You know, they are recent, I should say. Let me correct my words. We had to fight for it here. And so it's the same thing in the Asian culture, I think, that is going on even today. But let's talk about your grandmother, because you really had an interesting grandmother, because she believed in your being educated, didn't she?
Yes, she is interesting. She was my grandmother in this book, basically my mom's mom. And she, although, I mean, for her, you know, she even went through tougher situation in her generation. Yes. But she is interesting that when all in this journey, when I was little, I was sleeping with her, you know, in the same bed, and then she will try to teach me, you know, before I had to enroll to the kindergarten, she would just start teaching me about, oh, how to count 1 through 10, what's the color, what's the shape. I think inside of her, that must be itch. Must be an itch to say, okay, my cell couldn't do it, my daughter is not doing it, but I want my granddaughter to be able to have a different life. I think that must be going on in her mind.
I think you're probably correct, because when you talk about her, when she would try to communicate with your mother in her generation, there was a lot of confusion, because your mother had a lot of courage in that she chose to leave your father, which in times past, that could be a death sentence. He would have been able to kill her and nobody would have given her life any value at all. And when things really started shifting between your mother and your father, because by law she was just a concubine, so he really didn't have too much of an obligation to her, but your mother gave birth to your brother 4 years after you were born, and he did not have a son by any other woman but your mother.
Yeah, that time, yeah, that's correct.
So that was that was really significant to him, because boy babies were really valued.
Right, and so the interesting part is, that's why in the book there was a scene of, you know, when we were still all live together, and one day I'm probably about four, right? So my baby brother just started moving around, play. We're on the floor. We play blocks. And then when we were playing, for whatever reason, my baby brother started to cry. My father did not really figure out what happened. He just, you know, stepped close to me and gave me a big slap all the way, put me, you know, just fly into the corner. He just made a decision that, okay, if your brother is crying, that must be your fault. And so, yeah, that's pretty much it's how he perceives how girls are worthless.
Now, your mother, when she saw his behavior, and she had stayed with him for a long time because she didn't work, she didn't have an income. Women, as you said, were not encouraged to be educated. They were supposed to be just something that maybe looked pretty and was around for the convenience of the male. and to be a housekeeper, a cleaner, you know, all of these things. This is just nothing unusual with the state of women throughout the world in many respects. When your mother decided to leave, she took your grandmother, she took you, mm-hmm. and she left. Where was she able to go? This was something that was not supposed to be done.
Yeah, she had a lot of courage, I must say. I will always remember that day. I was in kindergarten, and then my grandmother and my mom show up in two suitcases. And that's it, two suitcases.
Mm-hmm.
And say that, okay, we are leaving. And my young mind couldn't understand, you know, well, what's going on. And then we hop on a domestic airplane, and basically we went to one of my mother's best girlfriend's home to stay there. And at the same time that, of course, my mom tried to find work to support, you know, all of us.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, that moment, then the best friend, I mean, the best friend, you know, is married, and but then the husband had eyes on my mother. But my mom, you know that this is surely is not a safe place anymore.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so we had to pick up, move again. And I remember just in my, I think before I went to elementary school, before I was 8, I couldn't remember how many times we moved.
Mm-hmm.
We just move, and then I think she tried to find a temporary job, work here and there.
Yes. Very, very difficult times. Now, one of the things that intrigued me, your mother had such courage because she went back for your brother. She was very concerned that if he stayed in the care of your father, he was going to end up not becoming what she felt he could become as a person. And in today's world, in our environment, that would have been considered kidnapping. I mean, she went back in and got him because she was nothing. She was just a piece of property as far as the culture went.
Mm-hmm.
And she had no rights, and he, as the male, had rights to everything. And so it took a lot of courage for her to go back and to get your brother and to get all of you out of there.
Yeah, you know, we went back, and then I didn't remember all the detail about my grandmom, you know, told me a lot of things. I do remember some of it. I just remember we went back a couple of days with my father again, and then I feel like, you know, my mom was in a lot of action or planning, because I remember when we went back and we looked at my baby brother on his neck, with this Auntie Sue, which is another girlfriend in the house, right?
Mm-hmm.
He on his neck, they tie a big piece of big cookie on his neck. So it's like, I guess it's, if he cry, you know, he can just take the cookie, because that Auntie Sue, she was even younger than my mom, and my mom was already 24 years younger than my father.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say herself is like a kid. I don't think she has a whole lot of idea about raising a child.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so it's just very sobering to see that scene.
It is. And again, the timing, the environment that you came through in Taiwan. Now, your mom, she settled down in Taipei and found a job at a hotel. Now, for a woman at that time to even get work, she had no education. She had to adapt, and I've heard this from other Asian women, that when they worked with the men, they had to learn how to drink as much as they did, they had to smoke, they had to do all kinds of things, because supposedly those were the rules that had to be abided by. And your mother, to provide for you, and for your grandmother and for your brother. She was working in this hotel environment, and it was pretty hard on you because mm-hmm. you could not understand why all kinds of strange men were coming in to the house.
Right.
Your mother, I'm sure, many times just felt so very, very desperate. So, I mean, it had to have been agonizing for her, but she did manage to provide for all of you, and you did end up going to school.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the school in the Asia, it's a little bit different than, I would say, quite different than America here. In Taiwan, it's, you know, if you got a good grade, and then after the, I think before was 9 years, it's obligation from government is free, and now I think now it changed to 12. So at that time, it's after 9 years, and then you have to basically enter a national exam. And so if you are doing good, you will go to top three and just public school, so you don't have to pay.
Mm-hmm.
And after the, 3 years after that, you enter another one. So the ratio at that moment is about 1,000 to 3,000 students that you can go to the top three. So you can tell the competition is pretty high.
Very high. And you were
very high. Compare like here, like my husband and I, we send our kids to private school because it's the better care in our opinion. So it's kind
mm-hmm.
of optic. Yeah, there is you if you're good enough, you go to public, so you don't have to pay. And my mom surely did her, you know, best. She tried to work. So that was why in my little heart, I want to prove my father was wrong about girls,
mm-hmm.
about the body of girls. So I remember that, unfortunately, at that moment, my mom started to addict to gambling. So she would, like, go to work, but then during the day, she would go somewhere else gamble with my grandmother. And my brother already with us, so I will go to school with my brother, come home, do some housework. I remember normally when I sit down to do my own homework from school, it's already 9 p.m. about.
Mm-hmm.
And my mom will come home and drunk, and, you know, sometimes she will stew up, and I had to, we live in a very small apartment on the third floor. I would go downstairs on the ground floor and then try to get her up. And this is when I was 8, 9 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And it just couldn't understand what's really going on, but we cried together. She threw up on everything on my body sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
It was a difficult time.
It was a very difficult time, but there was a fire inside of you. That's how I will describe it. And you were determined that you were not useless, you were not going to be a baby machine, because that
mm-hmm.
was a cultural attitude, that's all that women were valued for.
Mm-hmm.
And to some of my listeners that may be hearing this, they go, you've got to be kidding. No, it's true. The same thing, believe it or not, again, I'll repeat this, existed in the United States. And
mm-hmm.
it took a long time and a lot of very dedicated women to get past that so that we can enjoy what we are able to experience and what we consider freedoms today. The aspect of your being in school and the competition, you missed out by getting into the number one school. Schools were graded, number one, number two, number three, number four.
Mm-hmm.
You missed out by 0.02.
Right.
You and a girlfriend. It's sort of like the Olympics. There is tiny, tiny, infinitesimal number, and you go, what in the world? But you got into number two school. Now, you could have been totally despondent and everything else, but you switched your attitude. You said, I'm in number two. It's ridiculous that I didn't make it into number one, but I'm in the number two school. Your mother she was, I think, very pleased for you, but there was a sense of, my goodness, how are we going to take it from here? But you were in an all-girls school. At that school, their standard was very high. You said you were taught honor and how to be competitive, both academically and in other areas of life. And I found this interesting. So this school really, really prepared you for everyday life, and you actually had someone that had military background that was part of the training and educational process, because there was a certain exercise that you had to do, a certain performance. What was that?
Yeah, that was, I'm trying to explain that because obviously that's not, probably not really usual here. That was the, what we call Honor Team. It's like every year we have these, just like here, the July 4th. So for there, it's, we have double tens on National Day, and then they will always, the top three schools, all the girls' school and top three boys' school, we have this honor team will do all the tricks with, you know, the fake, like, gun, it's like a gun, you know, the shape of a gun, and you will throw up in the air, you will march, you know, just like a pretty much like army.
Mm-hmm.
And our coach, he was a retired coach from the military. And mm-hmm. so that was a very good exercise for discipline. Also, kind of just for me personally, you had to endure 3 months of hot sun. And we are talking about, you know, over 100 degrees, over 80% humidity in the summer there. To get to that one performance, you were marching through and watched by the whole nation in front of the president. It's a great honor, but that means work too, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it's such a, for me, it was such a priceless experience, because consider a lot of things going on in your mind. You are a girl, but now you're able to do that. That's one. Number two, the whole process of that training really prepared for me the foundation of self-discipline now in life, in my own business, and really to pursue the level of excellence.
Mm-hmm.
So,
I think
yeah.
all of those points are very well stated in your book. And you ended up going to a university, and in Taiwan, universities were considered to be a higher form of education than colleges, and your comment about aiming for the best, that's what you wanted to do. You were accepted by a university, and one of the first things that was foremost in your mind is that with this education, you could become independent. And then your father shows up in your life. And I had to say, when I read this portion, here's a man that had nothing to do with your lives when your mother escaped from his environment. And yet, because of the law of the land, so to speak, here you are, you're a mature adult. Your brother is not totally at that level, but he is of a mindset where the question is, why is this man coming back into our lives? And your success, he had found out about your success, and your words were, when you were talking with him, you are not proud of me. You're proud because someone with your last name achieved success, and you want everyone to know that I belong to you. You're not here because you care about me. You're here because you think you own me. You don't. Now, that is very, very powerful, because as a young woman with all of the experiences, and you share them in your book, with all of your experiences, you did not belong to anyone. You were your own person. What a tremendous cultural shift that had to have been for you in an environment that was not supportive too much of that. Yet because of education, there were other women in Taiwan that were in Taipei that were beginning to feel the same way.
Mm. Yeah, thank you so much, Donna, for your kind words. You know, that moment, I didn't think all that much. But I think just like you say, exactly, I just had a fire inside my heart. I thought, okay, life gotta be more than this. And really just a fire on. And then so when he showed up, all my mind went like, okay, what do you want from me? And exactly that's what I felt. It seems that he want to claim because the last name thing, you know, it's just like, okay, this is my child, because actually in reality he show up, he say I was, because he has other girlfriends, right? He mm-hmm. say I was the only child among all his children achieved to go to university.
Mm-hmm.
So when he said that, I know what he wants.
Right.
He
wanted to own you. He was going to put you up and say, gee, let's see, this is because of me. And you did mm-hmm. all the work. He didn't do anything. In fact, he had lied to you, saying he was going to help pay your tuition at the university. You go into the university, find that he hasn't paid you. You say, never mind, I'll pay for it. I mean, this is an extremely powerful series of experiences, because it enabled you to make choices. You went on to have a phenomenal career in your country, in the hotel industry. You became a manager of sales. You went through marriage, and you called it a marriage retreat, and I thought that's a very good combination of terms. That marriage ended up dissolving, but you felt like you were going through one test after another, one test after another. And it's been my experience, anyone who really is what I would call successful in life, they've had those kinds of tests, and they've had to make choices about how they were going to overcome those challenges that maybe somebody else would just cave into. But you did not. You were like the Energizer Bunny. You get something disappointing you, and you'd bounce back up, and you're beating your little drum, and off you're going. And then, you know, it's a fascinating thing about human character and personality. It seems like it gets built through the obstacles that we have to overcome and those challenges we choose to take on. You're a woman of very deep faith. Your mother and your grandmother both had a strong addiction to gambling, which you had mentioned.
Mm.
Yet there came that time when eventually your mother was able to get away from that. But it was a long road for her. Is your mom still alive?
Yeah, she is. And I'm very, very blessed. Just a couple years ago, she really totally broke away from the alcohol and gambling. And today she's also a woman of a strong faith. So I'm really, for that, for me, that's the biggest reward of everything
mm-hmm.
else.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because she, well, you know, that's why in my book I say, you know, in acknowledgement, I say, Mom, thank you for being willing to go through fire.
I agree. You have walked through fire more than once. You have a wonderful story of faith that is also in your book. I think as a woman, you have given us a wonderful gift by writing your book, A Little Girl Named Grace. You speak about this, but I think people need to know about your website, because it's the title of your book, A Little Girl Called Grace. I think that it's important for men and women both to understand the right of the individual to be the best that they can be is something that you have to be willing to work for. But more than that, it shouldn't make any difference whether you're male or female within a culture. Your value is the value of what you are able to pull up and out of yourself and give into society. And I think that you have just demonstrated how very, very much you have contributed to, I think, the betterment of many women in the Asian environment that maybe feel like they're locked into something and they can't get out of it. And I believe that because of who you are, you and some other women of your cultural background stand up and shine so that other women can know they can do the same thing. And I think that that's marvelous. Kelly Bader, it's been a pleasure having you as a guest. For those of you listening, you can check out her website, A Little Girl Called Grace. You can also get the book on Amazon.com. Kelly, thank you so much for being with me today.
Oh, thank you so much, Ms. Donna. It's such a pleasure and honor to be here.
It has been, again, a delight having you as a guest, and keep letting other people know, other women
know.
Okay,
I will.
They can
I
be.
I will.
the best, too. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment. More good things to share. Don't go away.
Are you taking too many oral pain pills and concerned about the side effects? Are you having trouble getting to sleep at night because of the pain? Well, I'm Lou Paradise. I had the same problems you have, cured my pain, eliminated pain pills and their side effects by developing Toprasin, pain relief and healing cream. Toprasin relieves pain without the side effects. It doesn't burn, it doesn't smell, and it doesn't stain. But don't take my word for it. Doctors, pharmacists, and pain specialists are using and recommending Toprasin and ending the suffering for thousands of people just like you. We know you hurt. We want to help. We are so sure that Toprasin will work for you, we offer a money-back guarantee. So if you want the pain relief without the side effects, ask for Toprasin. Toprasin is available at Duane Reade, Quick Check Pharmacies, and Wegmans. Ask for Toprasin or call 1-800-959-1007 for a store near you. That's 1-800-959-1007. Toprasin, the last pain medicine you'll ever need, and you can sleep on that.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hello, this is Donna. Welcome back. Telephone number to call into if you'd like for me to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight is 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. And if you're a first-time listener, all I need from you is your first name or your initial. And, of course, after that, relax. I'll tell you what I perceive, and then you're welcome to ask me a question about anything that you would be interested in getting information on. Julian Agaman is an interesting individual. He's the associate professor and chair of the Department of Urban and Environmental Policy and Planning at Tufts University. He's been involved with a lot of publications, and he is a fellow of the Royal Society of Arts and is a member of the board of directors of the Center for Whole Communities in Vermont. And he's involved with all kinds of other organizations. He made a comment about sustainable development. And he said, sustainable in development means using our unlimited mental resources, not our limited natural resources. He said, if this is true as I believe it to be, then we need to develop constructive ways to unleash these phenomenal mental resources and quickly. Currently, we waste human potential as wantonly and comprehensively as we lay waste to our environmental potential. And this is no surprise, as both actions are directly related. We need to mobilize our efforts towards developing the potential of all humans in order to live productively in a convivial manner within environmental limits. Failure to do so will end our ability to approach anything near the just and sustainable futures we are capable of. His words, when I was reading them, really had a very strong impression on me, and I will tell you why. Whenever you get into the study of history, you will find that there are cultures that have just been absolutely phenomenal in what they accomplished. But because they were not able to understand their environments, perhaps it's disease, not having the technology, the education to understand how to adapt and to shift, really presented a challenge. And I think of the Mayan environment. The Mayan culture was around for a long, long time, much longer than I think we are really aware of, and it just seemingly disappeared. However, one of the biggest factors for its, quote, disappearance, unquote, is because they had a massive cycle of drought, and they were not able to withstand that. So what was required was they had to move away from the environments that had been carefully cultivated. Also, disease could have hit. There's a number of things. Well, you go through history and you find that there are ups and downs in all parts of the world. And the key is adaptability, but also ongoing education. R&D, I think we'd call it in today's terminology, research and development. But when we're doing this, we need to be aware of a bigger picture. How can this affect what it is that we're living on, this planet Earth? And there are so many businesses today that are finally catching up with the understanding that they want to be environmentally conscious. They want to make sure that they're producing products that are going to be able to be recycled. The service aspect of it, they want to have it first class. Now, this is not something that has evolved really fast. If you look at history in America, there have always been those people that have spoken about trying to implement changes. But momentum, once it builds, once it's going, and it's just going and going and going, lots of times we get so distracted or involved with doing what we're doing, we don't think about how could I adapt this or change this to be more earth-friendly, to be more aware of long-term effects overall, whether it's dealing with food, building materials, roads, the development of housing, medicine, science on various levels. It is a whole different way of thinking. So those people that are able to make the breakthroughs usually are those that think outside the box. And it's not an easy thing to do. It's a real challenge. It's a tough thing to do. But yet, that's what enables us to move forward. Just like my guest today, for all of the negatives that were in her life, she had to make choices. As an individual, she had to make choices. And when she made those choices, she was looking at a bigger picture. When she was young, it's getting an education. I will prove that girls have value. Girls can think. I will prove this. She proved it to herself first. And then she demonstrated it in other ways. But always, she was climbing a rung on a ladder for her personally that was exceptionally important. So this is something that when we're thinking about our lives, if you feel as if you are in a box, I'll use the word stuck. Be aware that that's an opportunity for you. It's an opportunity for you to ask questions. And don't be like people of the past, men and women both. You don't question. You don't do this. You don't do that. You need to question, and you need to have a sense of integrity about yourself. You need to say, if this is not acceptable, what options can I move forward with? What can I do? How can I learn from those that have gone before me? Who is it around at this time in my profession or in a profession I would aspire to be a part of that I can find out about and I can look to and see that they are an example? I can recall talking with someone not that long ago, a man who had this wonderful young lady that was working in his office. She was so bright. And she just was absolutely exemplary in everything she did. Yet her level of self-esteem was so low. And he thought, how in the world are we going to be able to change this? This is such a talented young woman. She needs to know that she can really do something with her life in a very special way. So what he started to do was buy books about women that have done what was supposedly not possible for them to do. And by doing this, she was able to read. She was able to understand that she did not have to have this kind of attitude about herself. Now, this affects men and women both. So I think that we need to realize as individuals that part of our job is to be able to go into a public library, pick up magazines on magazine stands, thumb through them. Look for those qualities of character that you really admire and ask yourself, why do I admire those qualities? Why is it significant? And you have to make a choice. But I think if you are willing to learn, you're going to find there are a lot of people out there in this world that have the term success over their heads, but you need to find out about the journey that they've traveled. I think Oprah Winfrey, when she went public with a lot of things that went on in her life, there was an emotional breakthrough for her, but it also made people realize that she was a woman that had not had an especially easy life. And one of the reasons she could relate to others so well was because she had walked a very difficult and many times dark road of experiences. And there's just so many fine people around. Sometimes they're going to be a member of your family. Sometimes they'll be a next-door neighbor, might be a teacher in a school. Look for those examples that stress the best. And remember, your mind needs to be cultivated just like your body does. You need mental nourishment just like you need physical nourishment. And if you put the wrong kind of stuff in you, you're not going to do so well. Or if you don't nourish your mind, your emotion, your spirit, you're not going to be very healthy. You're going to be very much in a darker space because that's what you're going to feel that you're supposed to be in. That's not the way it has to be. Be true to yourself. Be willing to invest in yourself, and you will never come up a loser. Donna Siebel here. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 888-627-6008. I'm going to have a recipe to share with you, but I just thought I would talk about a subject for just a moment. And it's going to be related to an item that just about everybody has in their home, baking soda. I don't know about you, but baking soda has just been a part of my kitchen pantry collectibles, you might say, for years. It comes in handy. I remember being taught when I was a little girl, always keep a shaker of baking soda handy by the stove in case you ever have a fire. And through the years, occasionally, some grease in a pan has caught fire. The temperature's been too hot. Baking soda to the rescue. Poof! Just puts it out immediately. Well, it's a product that has so many uses. It can leaven cakes that have acid ingredients like your buttermilk, vinegar, molasses, juices. It also can be used along with cream of tartar that just does wonderful things when you have chocolate, brown sugar, honey, sour cream, apples are used together. Now, what's going on when you're using baking soda in your cooking? Well, the acid in the ingredients, along with the baking soda, produce a gas, which creates a leavening that makes it rise. Now, when you're using baking soda, you don't want to put it in whatever you're using and then just let the mixture just sit, because the gas that causes your cake to rise or your muffins to rise is going to be produced at room temperature, and it literally will escape out of the mixture. Now, it's been used for baking, but do you know in the old days when women would churn butter? Well, they would use it for cleaning out their butter churns, and they used it for cleaning other articles in the home. It was available in the United States as early as 1839, and do you know what? The baking soda, the Arm & Hammer baking soda that we have today, was a real competitor with a soda that came from England. A little bit of history for you on this very common item. And do you know why the American one became so popular? It was packaged in a bright red wrapper, and every pound of this baking soda had a free recipe card for the ladies. Things haven't changed much. We're always interested in those recipes, we gals, and the guys are too, but I don't know, there's just something about the fact that, gee, we got free recipes, so let's buy that product. So, here in America, that's what they did. They would come into towns in wagons and sell the goods. However, it can clean so many things. Baking soda can clean walls, plastic, car windshields, crystal. It's just great. And it's, if you're a fisherman, a fisherwoman, I have a girlfriend that loves fly fishing, you can put it on dull or rusty lures and hooks. And it's been used to work with stings, bug bites, bee stings, all kinds of things. So that common everyday product that you have in your house, you don't realize how far back its value goes in history. and also that for the women in America, it was an additional value because you've got free recipes. A little bit of trivia there for you. Donna Sebo, give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. By the way, tomorrow we are going to be talking with Mr. Tron. Now, we are going to be talking with him because we're going to be finding out about 75 great moving and storage tips. This man is a wealth of information, and it's something I know a lot of people can use. So it's a good show to listen into, and I hope you'll join me tomorrow. Meanwhile, we're taking a break for just a moment. When we come back, a special story to share. We'll be back in just a minute.
Have you ever had a friend tell you about a product they really believed in? Hi, this is Donna Sebo. Toprosin is a homeopathic cream that is just fabulous. I use it and my friends use it for relief of painful discomfort such as aching muscles and sore feet. Odorless, non-greasy, it is a product that belongs in everyone's medicine cabinet and first aid kit. Check out www.toprosin.com. That's T-O-P-R-I-C-I-N. And find out more information. You can order Toprosin online or call 800-959-1007. That's 800-959-1007. Be sure to give them the code DS30 and you'll receive a 30% discount. Toprosin, non-toxic, safe for children too. This is a product that really works. Try it. I think you'll like it.
As a counselor, Donna Sebo is available for private consultations by appointment. These can be done by telephone or in person. If you'd like to schedule an appointment with Donna, call 253-582-5604 or 800-872-8852. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. I don't know about you, but being in the garden this past weekend really was a necessity because I found out we had all kinds of delightful weeds, including manzanita trees. We have a lot of them in our neighborhood. We're deciding they wanted to take root in the area where we have our roses. So I was pretty busy out there pulling weeds and taking care of feeding the roses and doing all the things that need to be done for that part of the garden. But a lot of you really enjoy gardening. I'm not particularly a gardener, per se. Every once in a while, I like to get out and work in the dirt, but usually my schedule doesn't allow for very much of it. But I know of some people that just absolutely love it. It's therapeutic for them. They really like it. Well, if you are finding that this time of the year is a good time for you to get busy planting your tomatoes, cucumbers, etc., you can have your summer garden. And what you should do is be aware of plant sales. I know here in the state of Washington, the government actually has nurseries where you can go and you can get plants for literally pennies. And I have a friend, she put in a whole bunch of cedar trees on her property about 10 years ago, and she said, that cost me about a dollar a tree. Well, my goodness, now they're just absolutely gorgeous. So you want to check out, if you don't have a state facility that has these sales of plants, you might want to check with some different nurseries or Craigslist. You can check on Craigslist to see if there are special sales with plants and or plant seeds. Now, if you're a person that collects seeds, don't throw away the ones that you collected from last year. They're probably still usable. All you need to do to find out if a batch of seeds that you have gotten are going to grow is put about 10 seeds on a damp paper towel, fold it over and slip it inside a resealable plastic bag and close it three-quarters of the way, not all the way, but three-quarters of the way, and put it in a warm cabinet and a warm place, like a cabinet, and remoisten the paper towel daily. And then in a week, you'll see how many seeds are going to sprout. And then if it's more than five, it means that more than 50% of the seeds that you have are viable. So you can use them. Also, when you grow plants that produce a lot over a long time while thriving in a small space, those are going to be most effective. High yield, low effort crops. Now, that cuts down on your time and the materials you need to grow them. That includes leaf lettuce. All you have to do is pluck the leaves you need, and they'll grow right back I didn't know that. I thought once the lettuce grew, you just cut it, and then that was it. Nope. That's all you have to do is just take off the outer leaves that you're going to use, and then more will grow back. Cherry or grape tomatoes grow in big clusters, as we know, those of us that have grown them. And cucumbers, zucchini, climbing peas, and squash, well, you need to give them a pole or trellis to climb, and they'll grow and grow and grow. I know we had a neighbor once that had zucchini, and I just laughed. I've never known that zucchini could get bigger than a football. I'll never forget when I found that out. I was just saying, oh, my goodness. But often when they get to be that big, they can be pretty tough. Also, a lot of people here in the Pacific Northwest have really found hanging gardens are a joy. They can put their hanging garden planters in a place where it's going to get maximum sun. And that is really very, very positive. So you can plant herbs, hot peppers, dwarf vegetables. Hey, you're not going to use so much water. And there are dwarf varieties that you can utilize. And also, one place you need to check out, if you want to experiment with seeds, you don't want to spend a whole bunch of money, check out your dollar store. They have racks of seeds that you can buy. Also, they have gardening tools, items that maybe you don't want to spend a whole bunch of money on, but hey, it's a great way to utilize what's available for a very small amount of money. And then if you find that this is something you really want to do, you put a little bit more extra stuff in it, extra money into finer tools, and you're off and running. But a lot of people just don't have the time to do the gardening. Today's world is so different from the past. It used to be about 97% of the population were involved in farming. They didn't have 7-Elevens. We didn't have the transportation. You had to grow your own food. And about 3% were involved in technology, et cetera. Well, the numbers are pretty much reversed. Now we have about 3% of the population involved in farming and 97% of the population involved in various other industries. A good agricultural base is vitally necessary for a healthy economy, period, no matter where you are in the world. And fortunately, we have that here in the United States. I wanted to share a story with you about the Amber Room. When I had the opportunity to visit Russia, my husband and I were on a business trip over there. It was an incredible experience. I have not in anyone's place seen so much phenomenal beauty. The Amber Room was considered the eighth wonder of the world, and in 1717, it was packed up in crates and shipped by horse and cart from Berlin to St. Petersburg, Russia, as a gift to Tsar Peter I from the Prussian King Frederick Wilhelm. Now, it was 12 years in the making. Although it was incomplete, the room consisted of over 100,000 pieces of carved amber. Now, I know you know what amber is. It's prehistoric tree resin. And this was placed in panels. This room was just apparently incredible. Russian craftsmen, when it first arrived, were surprised because the amber pieces, when they were sent to Tsar Peter I, they were in crates for 15 years. It wasn't until Tsarina Elizabeth requested that the whole room be completed and that all the amber mounted accordingly. And 15 years after that project was started, it was opened to the public for the first time in 1746. Then Catherine the Great had this amber room moved to the Imperial Summer Residence, and it stayed there until World War II. In 1941, when the German troops advanced into the area, they covered it with paper and gauze, but the Nazis discovered the amber panels, disassembled everything in the room, packed it in 27 crates, and moved it out of the country. And later, they were recrated by the Nazis to protect them from bombing. The Amber Room was gone forever. The amazing thing about it is that it covered 55 square meters of wall, They had semi-precious gems in with the amber. It was just absolutely incredible. In 1997, there was a son of a Nazi officer who was involved with crating, was arrested. He was trying to sell a piece of the amber that was related to that that was taken by the Nazis. But no one has ever found out where the piece came from, so it's stored somewhere. This is Donna Siebel. Oh, by the way, and they have rebuilt the Amber Room. It was just opened recently. This is Donna Siebel. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Your life is your own. Be glad that it is. And always make an investment in yourself. You'll find that that is even better sometimes than putting money in the bank. Invest in yourself, in your life, in your career, in your education, in your quality of character as a human being, and you'll be one of the richest people walking this planet. This is Donna Siebel. We'll be back tomorrow, same time, same place. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Siebel Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Siebel Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.